This is an Ant Podcast Management production. Previously on What the Faux Travel Podcast.
The Faroes is the land of maybe.
We had the famous restaurant Cox. It's a bit difficult pronunciation in English.
Yeah.
Is it true? I've heard it's difficult if you're a man to find a wife.
Many of those that sing in Faroese, they have a popularity.
Tutl. Tutl.
Tutl. Oh, we're probably like fourth cousins or something. And you probably are most of the time.
The Prime Minister's phone number is in the phone book.
Danish sweet wife. How would you like to say if we move to the Faroes?
Hello and welcome to What the Faux Travel Podcast. I'm Amy.
And I'm Nick. We've been together since 2008.
And instead of saving for our future, we spent all our money on travelling.
What is a pension and should I have one?
Strap in as we take you on adventures around the world.
From the high mountaintops to reporting from under the deep blue.
There isn't anywhere we won't take you.
Where are we going today then, Amy?
Today, we're off to the Faroe Islands.
Welcome back to our Faroe Islands adventure. This is part two, so if you haven't listened to part one, make sure you go back and do that first. Otherwise, a lot of what we're talking about won't make much sense.
Part one ended on an upbeat musical note, but in part two, we need to have a serious conversation. There's been an elephant in the room during our time in the Faroes, something that's not very easy to talk about.
Yeah, it's very controversial.
Hi, my name is Angelin and I am a member of parliament for the Social Democratic Party in the Faroes, Hjalmarflokkurin.
We had an appointment with Angelin to understand the Faroese tradition of wailing.
Historically, you know, like way, way back, there was not a lot to eat in the Faroes. So what people ate was what they could grow, which wasn't a lot, maybe some potatoes some years, you know, some corn, but some years it failed. So there was not a lot of food in the Faroes. There was the fish, but it was difficult also to go out in boats to get that. It was also dangerous. So we ate everything that was around, like the fish, sheep, and the grint. And the way that a killing works, we call it a killing, grinta drap, it means a killing. It's a killing of the whales. So the way that it works is that when someone spots the grint out in the harbor, maybe, or, you know, in the sea, they alert the foreman of the grint in that area, and they take their boats out to capture the grint and take it onto a shore where they get killed. We still have the old tradition of it's not for sale, like it's not a commercial thing. You can't buy grint in the area where the killing is. The grint is divided up into pieces, equal pieces, and then given to everyone in that area. So it was a huge part of the food that we had available, and it has become a tradition, and we still do it today.
As you started, it is quite a controversial subject, but I think eating any type of animal these days is a controversial subject. But what do local people think? Is it very split, 50-50, that people agree with it now and don't, or is everybody for it?
I don't think that there are a lot of people against it, but I think the people who are for it are very passionate about it being their right to do it. And in the way that it has developed, it has become different than what it used to be. So the focus from outside has actually made the killing much more efficient and much quicker. So I think the focus from outside has also had some good things. But I think when you look at who eats the grint in the Faroes, for example, a lot of young women who want to bear their own children do not eat the grint because it has so much mercury. So it's not good for young women to eat it. And probably on a general level, for example, here in the capital, I think it's also limited how much people eat the whale meat. But older people and maybe people who do not live in the capital, but in smaller places, eat it. The debate has also created, or it's just a feeling that I have, that the outside focus has also strengthened the will to do it. But it is this thing that when you have the debate, Faroese people will talk about food and tradition. From my point of view, you know, like that something has been a tradition forever. It's not necessarily a good argument to keep the tradition. But when you look at the food aspect, you know, killing something that's here and not being taken from a long time, and also the non-commercial part of it appeals to me. I do not eat it myself. I don't eat meat at all, but I don't eat the grind either. It's definitely controversial, and it's a difficult conversation.
Yeah, and what's also important to mention from what we've learned is that this particular type of whale isn't endangered. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, the grind is not endangered, no.
So yeah, a bit of a sensitive subject there. And we want to be honest, as we always are on this podcast, before going, we were very apprehensive about learning about this, because when you look online, there's lots of horrific articles and things. So we were debating whether to talk about it on the podcast, because we see this as a tourist podcast, things to do, telling you about the country, but then that kind of felt that we needed to talk about it. So lots of debates has happened, but ultimately what really played out for me was that before going, I was really worried and apprehensive, as I said. But after learning, like, you know, talking to Injalyn there and other local people, it made me open my eyes and like, look, I eat meat. It's something that I am thinking about changing, and I'm kind of in that midpoint right now. I mean, we're vegetarian at home, but it got me thinking that how is what they're doing different to, say, a tribe in the Amazon who live sustainably? They live in their tribe. They don't go to the supermarket. How is what they're doing, say they use a bow and arrow and they kill some birds or some monkeys to eat, how is that any different? And I'm not saying that that's bad. It's just the whaling does get a lot of really bad press. It's a really difficult subject, and I mean, we're not gonna put the world to rights on this podcast for sure. But it gave me a bit of respect to understand that I think it's better that if they're eating any meat, that it's meat or fish that's come from their own sea that they've caught themselves. Like she said, they don't sell it, so that's a lot more sustainable than them, for example, eating steak from Argentina, right?
Absolutely. It's only when you try to understand these things from both points of view, you start to think, oh, okay, I can see both sides of it. One side, people don't want whales to die. The other side, if you're talking about sustainability and the carbon footprint on the planet, it's zero. You're right. It's worse for us to go to an Argentinian restaurant and eat steak that's traveled all the way to the UK. That has a carbon footprint on the planet. To farm the cow in the first place has a big carbon footprint. And then to have it shipped all the way here has a carbon footprint. But that's normal in our society. No one gets judged for going to a steakhouse, but that's worse. You could also say, if you're thinking about in terms of harming the planet, it's worse to eat soy products that are grown in the Amazon rainforest, because trees have been deforested to grow those soy products, and then they've been shipped around the world again. So you have to look at it from different points of view, from a sustainability, carbon emission, healthy planet point of view. Then you could say what they're doing, that there's nothing wrong with it.
But I do think ultimately the argument is it's just better not to do it. It's better not to eat meat. But like we said, we're not going to put the world to right. Is that the right saying? The world to rights?
Yeah. And that you said earlier, this is a podcast about travel, enjoying different places around the world. We could go into every single country we've been to. We could say good and bad things those countries do. We're from the UK. Look at our history. Colonizing, enslaving the world. That's terrible. But we can't go to other countries and say, what you're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
Every country does things good and every country does things bad. This is just something we thought we should talk about, and we thought our listeners deserved us to be honest, like we always try to be.
Absolutely. It's part of the culture. So we're going to talk about it. Now, while we had the chance to chat to the politician, Injalin, we wanted to know her thoughts on equality in the Faroe Islands.
Formally, we have a gender, a law on gender equality. But when you look at society as a whole, we're very traditional in our gender roles. And that affects a lot of the ownership of the businesses, politicians, ministers, and so forth. So formally, we have gender equality, but not actually. When it comes to, for example, LGBT rights, there is emerging understanding and acceptance, and also developing laws to have equality on that side, but it takes longer since we're a society that has been very isolated from other countries, and also a society that's very, I think it's 85% of the Faroese are part of the Faroese church. So it's a very Christian society where religion plays a big role, and that makes it a little more difficult, I think, to have these conversations, but it gets better and better. And we, in the beginning of the 2000, we accepted the law, the anti-discrimination law, that also involves gender and sexuality now. So that was a big step. And the pride that we have in the Faroe Islands every year, right before the national holiday, there's lots of people, and I think it's maybe the biggest pride per capita, you know. So, yeah, it's getting better, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's equal for LGBT plus to live here in the Faroe Islands as compared to maybe other Nordic countries.
Following Guri's recommendation earlier in the episode, we wanted to get out of Tórshavn. Tórshavn. We wanted to get out of Tórshavn and see the nature that the Faroe Islands are so famous for. We heard about a person doing something that we didn't know was possible here. Surf tours.
We were on our way to meet Katrin, also known as Kali. We just had to find them first.
Katrin? No?
I'm Katrin, yeah.
You are? You are. Oh, I'm Nick. From the podcast? Are we meeting you today? No? A different Katrin?
Yeah, it must
be
a
different... Are you surfing, Katrin?
No!
Oh, no. That's so strange.
I can't believe...
Oh, my God. I was like, did I forget something? Am I being interviewed?
And then I thought I had the wrong name or I was going crazy. Is there a popular name here?
It is, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Several Katrins later, we found the right person.
Hi, my name is Kelly. I'm a pioneer surfer in the Faroe Islands, and I have my company, Faroe Islands Surf Guide, that offers surf tours and lessons for everyone, locals and tourists.
We wanted to know how Kelly brought surfing to the Faroe Islands.
Yeah, I saw the film called The Fjord of like a bunch of professionals surfing here. So they made this film, this short film of surfing in the Faroe Islands. And I saw them like catching super nice waves and having so much fun. And of course they were professionals, but like with my self-esteem, I was like, yeah, I can do that. I tried surfing in California for the first time 15 years ago, but I really wanted to surf and like get good at surfing and doing it as a, I don't know, having it as a lifestyle, doing it regularly. And when I saw them like doing this here, like it was just an inspiration. So I had to like kind of like start from the bottom, start getting to know how to surf here because it's kind of different, it's kind of dangerous. Nobody else was doing it at all. So I kind of had to figure everything out on my own and yeah, just taking it step by step, doing it safely and surely and stuff like that. And that's like 7-8 years ago now.
So being the pioneer, the first person to do this, like you said, I'm sure it was really difficult. What was the reaction from locals when you first started trying to do this here?
Yeah, nobody here really goes out to the ocean to play because it's like dangerous, like with the temperatures, with the storms, with the rapid change in the weather and stuff like that, currents and other stuff that you really need to know. And a lot of people have died on the ocean here, which has been really common for many years. But of course, now in modern times, everything's more safe. But yeah, so it hasn't been a place to play, but when they saw me do it, they were thinking like it was a bit crazy, but also maybe intriguing. I'm not going to say like that it was because of me or us, but we see a lot of more people using the ocean for like a good thing, like bathing, cold water bathing or whatever. And just with the wetsuit, you can go out with a paddleboard, which we also do in the summer when it's calm. We have paddle tours with cliff jumping, cave exploring. And we see a lot of people like doing that, the safer kind of things, and also coming surfing with us. And like, we've been so busy ever since we started, like officially in 2020, when Corona hit, everybody wanted to go out, do something. And it's kind of like COVID friendly, like fresh air, distance and stuff like that. So we've been super busy and people are now like using the ocean much more, which we also like wanted to like inspire other people to do, because like it's totally possible if you have the right equipment, know what to do and stuff like that. It can be so good for you, for your health, for your mental health, for your physical health, just for fun, something to do together. Yeah, and also like if you are a person that wants to be active and kind of like offline, that's the perfect thing to do.
I just want to clarify for people listening, all the water activities that you offer here in the Faroe Islands, you're always wearing a wetsuit, right?
We always wear a 5-6 millimeter neoprene wetsuit, gloves, boots, hoodie and everything. But if you have that, you won't think about the cold at all. Like the water is 8 degrees Celsius, like an average all year round. So the salmon thrives here. Like it's a good place for fish and I don't know, I guess sea life. But yeah, so it's cold for humans to be in, like with no suit and stuff like that. And you can't last more than, I don't know, a couple of minutes, I guess, like 20 minutes, like for swimming or whatever. That's a max. If you start surfing here, you can surf anywhere in the world, pretty much. This is maybe the toughest spot to surf, but it's also like the most epic, I think.
So we understand that you're an advocate for the LGBTQ plus community here in the Faroe Islands. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, what's it like for a gay, lesbian, trans person living in the Faroe Islands?
It has changed a lot the couple of years. 15 years ago, I was one of the establishers of the LGBT Faroe Islands, the organization. I might also be like one of the pioneers in modern times for this, because I remember back in the days, it was like, where is everybody? Like, we just heard about these people, like maybe wow, gays and stuff like that. But the tendency or the trend was to move away from the Faroe Islands if you were an LGBTQ plus person, because it was like unbearable to live here. You couldn't find a spouse or whatever, and you were like kind of like mocked and stuff like that, harassed. Yeah, we wanted to just like say like, hey, where is everybody? Like, we should like speak up about our rights and all of that. And I don't know, get to know each other kind of. And also to get everyone else to know us, that like we are here, we're missing some rights. Like this could be a good thing for us, good thing for the whole community. Cause like with LGBT people, you get a lot of, usually like they're good artists and I don't know, they contribute with a lot of good things. So I thought like it was like a sad thing that everyone moved away, because if you move away, you get integrated in another society, you might never come back. So we lose a lot of good people. That was like 15 years ago. Since then, a lot of things have changed. Like people have become more visible, like the LGBTQ plus people. And it has become a lot more bearable to live here because you have like a community and you have a lot of more support. And you now, finally, we have a lot of rights as well.
If anybody is coming to the Faroe Islands and they want to surf or paddleboard or jump off of cliffs, how would they get in contact with you or your company?
Yes, we have our website, faroeislandsurfguide.com, and we are on social, all social platforms, Faroe Island Surf Guide. It's just send us an DM, email, call us, whatever, and we'll be there. We're pretty much available all year, 24/7.
After speaking to Callie, we took his recommendation and we went to the spot where they surf. And I'm going to read you the name of it phonetically. Then I've got a few other recommendations of places to drive to around the islands. But this place where they were surfing, I would pronounce it Tjorn... No, hold on.
That's too hard. People aren't going to get that.
Tjorduvik.
Do you want to spell it?
Let's give Amy a go.
All right. Oh, yeah, because it's got one of those O's that has a line through it.
Oh, with a line.
Yeah. So, Tjornjuvik.
Great.
I'd say.
That sounded better. But it's towards the north.
It's spelled Tjornuvik. Yeah. So, it's on the same island as Tórshavn. So, you can drive all the way up and it's kind of the top point. So, you get beautiful views.
It's spectacular. The drive is amazing. Being the driver, you want to look around and see everything because it is spectacular. I've never seen anywhere in the world like the Faroe Islands.
Yeah.
People might say similar to Scotland, Canada, New Zealand, and it is a bit, but it's so unique.
Yeah. And a lot of people would assume similar to Iceland, but I'm really not just saying this.
Iceland's boring.
Listen to our Iceland episode. We weren't impressed with Iceland at all. I just thought this was really beautiful. But yeah, so we'd recommend going to that place. So when we left Cali, we drove straight up to there and we saw some of his colleagues who were actually doing a surf lesson. I think with a few photographers, I think we're taking a surf lesson. But yeah, as you can imagine, it was very cold. We love cold water therapy. So we definitely would have got in, but we didn't have time. And plus they already had a lesson going on, but it was really cool. Like there were a group of people, I think there was like an event going on separate to the surfing, but there were loads of people having like a meal together, I think, because we actually walked in there.
I think it was a film crew, like BBC or something.
Oh, that's true. But we walked in there because a bunch of people were eating. We assumed it was a restaurant and we were like, can we eat there? They were like, no. This is a private event.
Where is the local restaurant? There isn't one. But what a spectacular place. It's a little village by this black beach cliffs. Like out in the distance, remember, you can see there's two cliffs on their own,
yeah,
like sticking out like pinnacles.
But yeah, amazing. So when you're driving along the cliffs and then you get this like panoramic view of the water and the black beach as well. And then you see, I mean, we haven't even spoke about the architecture or like the design of the houses. So they have, I'd say like 4 or 5 colors that all the houses are. So they're really like rich, earthy colors. So you've got a red, you have yellow, I believe brown and blue and black.
Black,
I think.
Definitely.
So a lot of the houses are in those colors, like really like matte paint with red roofs. Like it looks so good. And any picture that you take, if you can get these houses in, it's like definitely, you can tell you're in the Faroe Islands. It's just it's so pretty.
Instagram hotspot. And there were so many places we drove to, which just looked amazing. But I'm going to give you just 2 more recommendations. Not too far from the place Amy just said. Is a place called Gjove.
Yeah, Gjove or something, isn't it, right?
Gjove.
I feel like the G might be silent.
Let's go with that. There's an amazing canyon there that you can walk down and get close to the water. The ocean coming in is like really, really strong and powerful. And it's amazing just to be there and watch it. And the little village is very beautiful as well. And the spelling of the town, Gjove, is Gjove. You can get there by car. I'd recommend it.
I'm trying to get a pronunciation for you.
Jykff is a little pearl of a village at the northeast tip of Eysturoy.
And I've got one more, which I think was the most spectacular, the famous waterfall.
One second. I was looking for the video when you were telling. I want to go back to Jykff. I really do. With the canyon there, I think you were saying the gorge with the water. Oh my God. I mean, We wouldn't recommend traveling for Instagram, but if you were to, this would be a great spot. It is the most picturesque place. There's a bit where you can do a walk up to the top and look at all the waves crashing over. And yeah, it's just absolutely stunning. And it was just like so homely. When we first parked the car, we were walking down like where the river was meeting the sea. There were a family that was probably like 10 people. And like, I don't know, seven of them were kids and they were just playing in the river and the parents were just there. Nobody's on their phone. And it just looked so like, so I think every single local that we spoke to said that this is a brilliant place to bring up kids. And we saw that, didn't we? Like no one had to tell us. It just, it looks like it's going back in time, but then they also have all modern life. So they have internet and stuff, but they prioritize nature and it's just so good for mental health, right?
Mental health, yeah, being outside, family, life, safe for kids.
Mm-hmm. We've learned people don't lock their houses.
People don't lock their houses. There's no bad men like Prince Andrew wandering around. Kids are safe.
Let's move on. So on the topic of hiring a car, we've got a bit of advice for you.
We learned the hard way.
So as they are in most countries, the parking ticket, people gotta earn a wage.
That's true.
No, but seriously, guys, they actually have a really good system in place, but we just didn't know about it. So when you arrive to where you're parking, it's actually free parking everywhere, which actually isn't common in a lot of countries. That's great. They definitely need to put that in place in England.
Yes, please.
But they have this clock. So when you're hiring the car, you'll see it in your car window. And you just put in, it's like a physical clock.
Like a paper one.
Yeah, but like with hands on it and everything. It's not a digital clock. And you point the hands of the time you arrive. So if you arrive at 5 to 4, you put 5 to 4 on it. And then if you're in a 2-hour spot or a 5-hour spot, then they know when your tickets run out, basically.
Yeah, so the mistake we made was, oh, it's a 2-hour parking spot. Yeah, we were there for an hour and 45 minutes, no problem. But we didn't put the right time on our clock
because we didn't know it was there. So that's our biggest piece of advice for you: A, get a car, and B, make sure you're putting the right time on the clock.
You're welcome. Final recommendation, and this is the most spectacular place. If you Google Faroe Islands, you'll likely see this spectacular waterfall going into the sea, and behind the waterfall there's like this village with a mountain behind it. It's got like all the best parts of Faroe Island in this one shot. And it is called Gásadalur. And it used to be one of the most remote villages in the Faroe Islands, very difficult to get to. So it was cut off from civilization, if you can say that. But now they've built a road. It's like a tunnel going through the mountain. So you can drive there. So tourists can just drive there, get their picture and leave. And that's what we did. But spectacular. It's near the airport. So do it, you know, do that when you first arrive or when you're about to go back to the airport.
Actually, we can give you really easy directions. So once you have picked up your hire car, which I wouldn't just recommend, I would say is necessary. You need a car in this place. Once you come out of the junction of the airport, you turn right to go to Tórshavn, or you turn left and you can go to, I think it was like 15 minutes down the road, you'll get to this waterfall. I mean, they're not exact directions, but that's just kind of that way is that way. That way's that way. There you go. That's the advice. We give you great advice in this podcast. That way's that way, and that way's that way.
Well, we give you a guide. We don't want to give you all the information. You can work the rest out for yourself, but that should help you. It's amazing. It's so spectacular. Like, I know we've joked on the show before, I don't really care about waterfalls, and that's still true, but it's not just that. It's the waterfall, it's the village, it's the ocean, it's the mountain, it's everything. It's spectacular.
And the colour of the water, we haven't said that yet, have we? Wow.
Deep blue.
Talking of water, that's a very nice segue onto our next bit.
Almost like you planned it.
So the islands are spectacular from land, as we've said, but we felt like the proper way to experience this place was from the sea. We heard about the possibility of spotting puffins as well as many other seabirds.
I'll be guiding you on the tour today, telling you about things that we see as we are sailing this very beautiful Sunday morning. As we are leaving Vestmanna, Vestmanna is an average Faroese town. 1,250 people are living here, but we also have a hydropower plant here in Vestmanna, producing green energy, and you will actually see one of the four dams that we have behind the boat that collects rainwater, and they take the rainwater through those pipes that you see running from the hill down to the hydropower plant, down to a turbine that converts the water into green energy.
So when we first booked this trip to the Faroe Islands, I'd say the thing that was like top of my list, the thing that I was most excited about, was seeing puffins for the first time.
And on the top, there where you can see the green grass, there is a puffin colony, but unfortunately just now without puffins, because the puffin birds have left us.
I just love how bitter he sounds. The puffins have left us.
Because the puffin birds have left us. They are finished feeding the chick, and then they go out to the sea again when they finish feeding the chick. The puffin is a seabird. Only reason that they come into land is to lay an egg and feed the chick, and then they go back into the sea where they stay until May next year.
It's not just the puffins that he's bitter about leaving them.
We have to talk about fish when we talk about the Faroe Islands, and here to the left there's a salmon farm. And just in these days, a salmon farm without salmon, because they just yesterday harvested the last salmon. It's the fact that they are without salmon for at least 2 months now. Then they put new salmon in, and they are allowed to hold 1.7 million salmon here.
I love it how this guy is like, yeah, they're a puffin colony, just without puffins. Imagine if he's giving you a tour like around town, or like shows you his home. Here is my family home. Of course, without my family, because my wife has left me for Bjorgason. It's awkward because it's only me and him that live on the island. So we bump into each other.
Quite frequently.
Quite regularly. And I hear them making love.
That's actually a very good accent. That's great.
But obviously we're joking. Despite not seeing any puffins or salmon, I'm not bothered about the salmon, we left learning a lot about Faroese traditions, their way of life, but importantly, like all the seabirds that are on the island. This is a big reason why a lot of people go. I've read that, you know, it's a paradise for hikers, which I can see, the Faroe Islands, but also for bird watchers in particular.
Man came out here and climbed the cliff to hunt the bird, to take eggs. It was, I don't know, 50 years ago. And you can actually see a chain that's hanging up in the top of the cliff. And that was used to, for the men that came here, they used the chain to come up to the top. And there they could take some birds and eggs. And it was very important that they could provide themselves with everything that you could get from the nature. It was not so easy just to go to the supermarket. They had to come here and get fish and food, birds and eggs.
Our guide also showed us a ghost village called Slatanes. This ghost village had around six houses.
The last family left in 1964. And the houses that you can see, they are only used as summer houses. And it's the same families that used to live there back in time that owns these houses. The only way that they can come or go from Slatanes, if not by sea, is over the mountain. Such a journey takes several hours. That's if you have nothing to carry. So if you have something to carry, obviously it takes a lot longer time.
So that was our boat tour. We'll leave the link of the company in our show notes. And where we got the boat from was a small town called Vestmanna. I can pronounce that one. I want to hear it one more time, please.
And there is a puffin colony on the side facing the ocean, just now without puffins.
He's great. I don't think he realizes how great he is.
He is a star, an unborn star, a diamond in the rough.
Yeah, undiscovered. We'd heard from a few people during our time in the Faroe Islands all about something called Google Sheep View. We're now going back to Goody at Visit Faroe Islands to tell us more.
Well, that was a campaign that we did back in 2016, and it was because we wanted to make a a fun thing out of the fact that we are a small place and that unknown, that not even Google Street View had found us. And of course, today the world map is synonymous with Google. And so that's why we try to flirt with them to get the Faroe Islands on the Google Street View. And of course, we wanted to do that in a little funny way. And so we got our locals, so-called locals, like the sheep, to help us out. Because actually in the Faroe Islands, the sheep outnumber the population. We have like 50,000 people and 80,000 sheep.
Wow.
So that's why we did that. It went totally viral and we were contacted by Google, who actually came and recorded the Google Street View thing. So now we are on Google Street View.
Our time in the Faroe Islands ended where it began, in the capital, Tórshavn. And it was time for a little drinky poos.
I love your branding.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks really cool.
So how do you say Oy?
Oy, that's Oy.
Oy.
Like islands, yeah.
Oh, is that what it means?
Brewing,
okay. Yeah. That's Peter, CEO of Oy Brewing.
My background is I've been working in the beer business almost all my life, also with other companies. We like craft beer, and it's very popular. Everything's coming to the Faroe Islands, so just a little bit slower, maybe. In beer, you need malt, barley malt, and you need hop and yeast and water. And water is about 90% of the beer. So that we have a lot of here in Faroe Islands, and soft water, and very good water to brew beer with. But the malt and the hop and the yeast, we are imported. The weather is not there to have malt and everything. We have tried it, but it's not this amount we need. So we have to import it, yeah.
What would you say your typical Faroese person, what is their favorite drink? Are we talking beer? Are we talking wine, whiskey, you know, vodka? I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah. They're drinking more wine and more beer. So not strong stuff, because we can get it when we want it. Before, you had to the strongest possible. So you didn't know when you get it next time. But now it's more easy, and it's more wine and beer. Yeah. I think it's getting more and more space. And also that there are coming more tourists to the Faroe Islands. More hotels, more cafes, so it's getting more and more going out also, and the cafe is modern. Before, a little bit way back, it's 30 years or so, it didn't have so many cafes and this restaurants and so on, so people were more sitting at home.
If a tourist was to come to the Faroe Islands and they wanted to try really traditional food, which dish would you recommend they eat?
Here in the Faroe Islands, we have... way back, the people, when they lived here, they didn't have fridge and freezers and so on. So they made, you have to have salted meat, or you have to ferment it or something. Huh? A very good food in Faroe Islands is fermented lamb. We slaughter the lamb and then we hang it up in our chutler, is the name. And we hang it up there and it's fermented, actually. It's a rotten somehow. Process, and then we boil it or we put it in the oven or something, and it's fermented. It's a very strong taste, maybe for a foreigner, that's what we like it here. And also we do that with grind, for example. We hang it up and dry it, and then we also do it with fish, rostan fisk, and that we boil also. And you don't get it otherwise, I think, in the world, but yeah, Iceland has some of it, maybe.
Whenever I travel to a foreign place, another country, I always like to know, it helps me, what's the typical price for a beer?
Yeah, you pay for a pint, it's like 60 kroner.
About, yeah, £6, £6.50. And finally, how do you say cheers in Faroese?
Skål.
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 Thank you.
After a chat and a little tasting session for Nick of Gluten-Free.
Gluten-Free lifestyle.
And the hipster. After that, he took us for a little tour.
When you boil hop the beer, it gets the bitterness. And then you boil it for 1 hour and 50 minutes around with 100 degrees. And after that, you can put it over to the yeast, to the tanks.
Just as we were leaving, Peter's head brewer walked in.
Hi. Hi. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
You are the magician brewer.
Yes.
You're the genius.
Thank you.
we're making a podcast just about the Faroe Islands and about life in the Faroe Islands and why tourists should come here, what you can see. It'll be amazing if we can just ask you what it's like being an Italian person living here. Is that okay?
After a little more convincing, we sat down with Alex to hear his views of living in the Faroe Islands as a foreigner.
I really enjoy this place, actually. I have to say that it's probably the place that I'm enjoying the most of the places I've been living. Many different countries, all in Europe, but never left Europe. But yes, I really enjoy this place. The nature of the landscape is just, incredible. And the people, I really like the society. It's kind of very, you know, it's an extremely safe place. People is very close. Yeah, they're very nice. It's a very polite society.
I'd be interested to know, do you speak any Faroese or are you? No, not at all.
I don't speak any Faroese at all, but I just arrived here like in January, last January. So
yeah, I can imagine it's a difficult language to learn.
It looks like. I bought a Teach Yourself Faroese, a book, and I started to try to learn, but it's quite difficult, yes.
But for someone who's living and working here, you can survive with English?
Yes, completely.
So you arrived in January. I want to know, what is it like in the winter?
It is dark. Depressing? No, because I'm not depressed by darkness. So it's all a matter of, it all depends by your personality. I'm not depressed by the lack of light.
We asked everyone that we met in the Faroe Islands this same question. What are the pros and cons of living in such a small island nation?
What you do here is in art, in everything, when you express yourself, it has a national meaning, which it doesn't necessarily in a large or even a huge country. What is difficult is that most of the milieu here, for theater, for this type of music, well, for agriculture, for everything, is so small that you are sometimes not able to have all the power, the manpower that needs to be put into efforts like doing things better. But we have very, very good connections to, especially the Scandinavian, Denmark, Iceland, maybe most, but also Norway, to collaborate.
The good thing about being such a small country, I think, is that everybody knows everybody, so it feels safe. It's very difficult to dislike people or to hate people because you come into interaction with them all the time. So even though you might not agree on something, you're gonna be in, you know, your cousin's birthday eating cake together, or you know. So I think the social bond, and then the big escape in the nature, that's also possible for you if you feel a little bit suffocated in the social structure. Yeah. But of course, I mean, that's also maybe the more negative side of it is exactly the same, because it can also get too much when someone else is in your business all the time. And maybe especially when you're younger and you want that freedom. When you have kids, it's great.
The good thing is that it's a small country, and the bad thing is that it's a small country. Seriously. Like, you get the benefits of being a small country, like it's a close, safe community, or like a country to stay in and everything. Like, the solidarity is really good, but also like everybody knows you. You can't be like a neutral person kind of, or like everyone's in your business kind of, and you have to really know how to live with that.
I like it. It's small, yeah. Everybody knows each other. They know what you do. That's maybe a minus, but it's very free for, you have not so many criminals, whatever. And the nature is beautiful here. And then people are complaining about the weather a little bit, but I think in all the, it's a plus to be here, yeah.
Oh, it's a really good life, especially when you, as a kid, you can play outside all the time. You don't have to think about, be careful, and like the kids are more freely too. And you can see how much my own kids, when we lived in Copenhagen, that we called the parents, hey, can my kid come and play with your kid? it was around the calendar as such. But here in the Faroes, kids go outside, they play, and they play as long as they can. And when there's a summer holiday and the lightning outside, it doesn't get dark. They play outside quite late. It's a really good country for kids.
We want to be ourselves in the Faroe Islands, but we wouldn't ever think of being all alone. Nobody in the whole world wants to be completely alone. Very good collaboration with Denmark, even if it's not the brother nation, it's more the parent nation.
Yeah, like father nation, yeah.
It shouldn't be thought of like that, but it's just kind of that. The travel distance to all our neighbors, Scotland, Norway, Iceland, Denmark, is 2 hours at the most. That's nothing nowadays. It's a good thing that young people, for a period at least, go to another country. If they didn't do that, we'll lose a lot of connections. So now, I think it's only 5 years ago, there was 48,000 people. Now there's 54. And that's enormous. I mean, if it had been another country, it would be a catastrophe. But here it's not a catastrophe. It's nice. It's people with a lot of imagination that come back. They're not running away from other places. They are looking forward to come here. We have too few houses now, actually. It's a problem. But that's the only problem I see.
Something that kept coming up was how safe it is in the Faroe Islands. So speaking of safety, Peter at OY Brewing let this slip earlier.
We only lock the door at home when we go out of the country.
Oh, yeah?
Otherwise, it's open.
Yeah, someone else told us the same thing.
Never. I don't know where the key is.
You don't know where your house key is.
No.
You don't need it.
I feel like we've promoted too much on this episode that no one locks their doors.
But it's just great. I love it that places like that still exist in the world where you don't need to. We've seen it on YouTube videos before, like little villages in Italy.
I was just about to say
where
that.
Where people left their keys in the door.
Yeah, like you walk down the street and literally people's keys are still in their doors. That's crazy. Like, that surely is crazy, knowing that tourists go there, right?
Well, it seems crazy to us, but it's so nice that places like this in the world still exist. I love it. It's great.
Now, we've come to the end of the episode, which makes me a little bit scared because of what we said at the start, which was a very long time ago now. We said that we would call the PM the Prime Minister of the Faroe Islands, because he's... Have you researched? Have you got his number?
I'm about to.
Okay.
I'll do it right now.
Right. A slight pause so we can find his number.
I think I found it. I found a number for his office. I mean, it's a Sunday night as we're recording this, so he might not be there, but should we see what happens? And we're doing this for pure entertainment value for you listeners. This is going to cost us because it's an international phone call.
As if this podcast doesn't cost us enough already, we're calling international numbers.
Should we give it a go?
Yep.
I'm nervous.
Press go. Do you even know his name?
Okay.
Oh, good luck with saying this name. His surname is Nielsen, but is Baru Asteg Nielsen.
Baru Asteg Nielsen. Mr. Prime Minister, sir. Your Honour. I'll go with Your Honour.
Your Honour, I don't think so. Right, just ring.
Call to this number are barred from your phone.
Oh, well, that's...
Sorry,
that's such a letdown.
Oh, what? Barred from my phone? Am I on a list?
You type? So what did we learn from this adventure? We learnt that the Faroe Islands is a very different place from our home in the UK.
And this is exactly why we travel. We travel to open our minds to different places, different foods, different experiences, and different points of view. But what we find, however, is that the more we travel, the more we're able to see past these differences and realise that deep down, we're actually all the same. That is the beauty of travel.
See you next month.
Before we wrap this up, we've got a question for you.
Is your boy Tarquin going on a gap year?
Is your gal pal Rachel off to eat, pray, love herself silly?
Then the best way to support this show is to share it with all your travel buddies.
Thanks. Bye.